Okay. So tonight, as you know, is the 5th of Iyar, A-E-R, which is Yom HaTzma'ut officially. Many people observed it today on the 4th of Iyar because in Eretz Yisrael, the celebration is such that there's parades and all kinds of events, and they're afraid, Rabbanut was afraid it's going to run into little Shabbos issues and so on. So tonight is in between. So tonight I thought we'd talk about some issues relating to Yom HaTzmut, the establishment of a Jewish state in Eretz Yisrael, why that's significant, why there's a reason to celebrate. I'm not going to talk so much about how you celebrate, but the reason we celebrate. But as their practice, we'll start with something from the Parshas HaShavua. This week we're in Parshas Tazria and Metzora, and much of the two sedras talk about the individual who's contracted Saras. We've mentioned many times, Saras is not, although translated leprosy, it's not really the physical medical disease called leprosy, or Hansen's disease, they call it sometimes, but rather it's a spiritual affliction. That's why you don't go to a doctor, you go to the Kohen. He's the one who prescribes the plan to get out of being a Metzora. And has physical manifestations, obviously. The Gemara says there are a number of averus which lead to a person getting tzaras. The most famous is Lashon Hara. But in any event, the Torah tells us in the first of the sources, Paragid Gimel of Ayikra Pasuk Memvav, Kol Yumei Asher Negabo, as long as the person has this nega, has this tzaras, Tomei Yitma, he's Tomei, Tomei who, Bodod Yeshay Mechutz Lamachanem Oshavo. He has to dwell outside the camp. He has to leave and live outside the camp. Rashi explains, not just outside the camp, there in Perek Yidimah, Pasuk Memvav, Pasuk 2, Source 2, Mechutz Lamachanem, Chutz Misholos, Lesholos Machanem, outside all three camps. In the Midbar, the Machanem was set up in three camps, right? There was the camp of where the Mishkan was, and it was Machanem Levi around, and Machanem Yisrael. He's got to go all the way outside. Okay, that's where the Metzora has to live. So there's an interesting story that's related to Navi. It's actually the Haftarah for Parshas Metzorah. So we'll read that as Haftarah this week. So what I printed here in Source 3, the opening psukim of the Haftarah for this Shabbos, Melachim Beis Perek Zayin, starts in Pasuk Gimel, V'arbo Anoshim Hayu Metzorahim Pesach Hashor. There were four men who were Metzorahim. They were sitting outside the city. To give the background, it was the city of Shomron, which was the capital city of the northern kingdom, Malchus Yisrael. And there was a siege that had been laid on that city by the people of Aram, Arameans, Machane Aram. They had laid a significant siege, and the city was in desperate straits. And part of the result of the siege was that no food came in or out, so people were starving, and even the most ordinary provisions were incredibly expensive and so on. It was a disaster. And the Navi records, again, in Malachim Beis, Perek Zayin, starting in Pasuk Gimel, that there were these four people who had Saras. They were outside the camp. If you look for a moment in Rashi, in the second Rashi, printed in Source 4, Malachim Beis, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Gimel, Pesach Hashar, Kemo Shenemar, Bar Dod Yeshu, Mechutz Lamachanem Oshavo. Rashi quotes the Pasuk in Har Sedra. The reason they were outside the camp is because they had Saras in fulfillment of this Pasuk. Now, full disclosure, there's some literature. Perhaps Shomron wouldn't have qualified as a city that a Metzora has to go out, so the discussion about why that is, but Lamai said that's where they were, they're outside. So I'm not going to read the whole Source 3 inside, just to tell you what was going on. So the Navi describes, these people were in a lose-lose predicament, right, because they were outside the camp, they couldn't go into the city, so they decided, look, if we're going to stay here, we're going to die of starvation, right? So let's go into the people of Aram, to their base, their siege, and surrender. They'll kill us, they'll kill us. We have nothing to lose. I mean, we're dying here anyway. So let's go in and tell and just surrender. So they got up and they came into Machane Aram, and lo and behold, they found that the place had been deserted. Everybody left. They ran away. And stuff was left behind, food, provisions, property, belongings. Like people, you know, ran out. And Pasuk explains in Pasuk Vav, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu made this loud noise in the middle of the night, and it sounded like an invading army was coming, and they concluded that the king of Yisrael, the king of Shomron, had hired some mercenary armies to come fight, and they were terrified, and they all ran away, and they just ran out, leaving this stuff behind them. So these four Mitzorayim had a party. You know, they'd been starving, now there's all this food, and they ate, and then they started taking things and so on. But look for a moment, a Pasuk test, and so it's three. Vayomu isho reyehu, lo chein anachno osim. We're not really behaving properly. Hayom hazeh yom besorahu. Today's a day of good news. It's a Yeshua. Okay, the siege is over. The invading army has run off. So we can't just take care of ourselves here. Let's go into the city and tell the king what happened. That's what they did. Okay, they came in, they told the king. At first they didn't believe. They thought maybe it was a trick that they'd gotten out of the camp so as to ambush them when they came out or whatever. But the messengers reported back after checking the area that there was for miles around, scattered, like people ran off in a hurry. They realized this great Yeshua, and it saved the city of Shomo and the Malchus Yisrael and so on. Okay, what does that have to do with our topic tonight, the Yom HaTzmaut? So it's interesting, one of the arguments that people have against supporting or recognizing the establishment of a Jewish state in Eretz Yisrael as a significant accomplishment is that it was brought about, for the most part, by non-observant, by secular people, by non-observant Jews, by non-Shomer Torah mitzvahs, and therefore we can't view this as any type of a great Yeshua Geula, because it was brought about by people who weren't committed to Torah mitzvahs. So, who are these four people? It doesn't say in the Pasuk who the four people are, but Rashi tells us, in Source 4, the first Rashi, who are they? Gehazi Ubanam. They were Gehazi and his children. Who's Gehazi? If you look a few Tzpokim earlier there in Malachim Beis, we find that Gehazi was the disciple or perhaps the executive assistant to Elisha the Navi. And in what would have been the Haftarah of Parshas Tazria, which we don't read this week, it's a double sedger, but Parshas Tazria describes that a certain non-Jew by the name of Naaman also got Tzaras, and he came to Elisha. And Elisha suggested that he dip himself in the yard, then he would first refuse. I went into more mighty rivers than this, and it didn't clear up my problem, and so on, Elisha. And at the end of the day, Naaman's tzaraas disappeared, and he wanted to pay Elisha and reward him for curing him, and Elisha was a kiddush Hashem, not the Zakash Baruch Hu, it wouldn't take any money. Gehazi couldn't stomach that, so the psukim explained. In Source 5, Malachim Beis Perikei, so Gehazi ran after Naaman and said, in effect, well, you know, if you want to give something, my master sent me, you know, and basically he took stuff. Okay, you can read the psukim. Again, I don't have time tonight to go through all the sources word by word. Yeah, take a look. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Zayin and Beis. Source 6 spells out the whole story. First, he made him swear, and it said there are 8 things, and he was studying the Perikims. Elisha was learning Shmona Shrotz without that kind of mindset. But I think you can read the psukim or the sources yourself. You're welcome to keep the sheets, of course, and you'll see what happened. So it ended up that Elisha figured out what happens. In effect, he cursed Gehazi, and he told whatever Tzaraas Naaman had, now is going to come on you and your descendants. That's how these came to be, the Arba Mitzorayim. Okay, these were the four guys who were sitting outside because they took Kesef and got him 8 things. You have a person who mentions two. Okay, more than that. So what am I saying? So Gehazi was not a tzaddik. Okay, and yet he was the vehicle through which the Yeshua of the city of Shomron came about, he and his 3 sons, even though he wasn't a tzaddik or a shashiva, he wasn't from prayer. He was, not only he did this aveir, but take a look in source number 8, the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Tzadi Amral, famous Mishnah. We know the Mishnah. Kol Yisrael Yesham Chelek Olam Abba. Shenemar V'Amech Kulam Tzadikim Olam Sheeretz Neitzim Atoim Asher Batzbar. Right, the famous first Mishnah, Perek Chelek, which the Perek gets its name. Right, this Mishnah tells us that every Jew officially has a share in Olam Abba, and then it goes on to tell you who will forfeit his fair share in Olam Abba. Did this other, that other, the other, and then it mentions Shlosh Malachim, 3 kings in history, and Arba Hedyotos, 4 commoners, lost their Chelek Olam Abba. Explains who they are, and there's a machlokes about one of them. Menashe, look at the last one on the list. Who's the last one? Gehazi. So he took away, it was a chil Hashem, basically. So I don't want to go into now exactly, you know, why the severe punishment. At the end of the day, the Mishnah tells us this guy, Gehazi, is one of the people who has no share in Olam Haba. So obviously, he was not a tzaddik, and not a, you know, a role model and a great person. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that the Yeshua for the city of Shomron and through this capital city of Shomron, Malchus Yisrael, at the time of the battle with Aram, would come through this guy. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do that? I don't know. Okay, but at the end of the day, it seems to me that one can argue that the fact that there was a Yeshua, a Geula in our time, which was engineered or brought about to non-observant Jews, is not necessarily a time. This is not my idea. Baron Soloveitchik has an article about this and others. It's you know, I think it's an important point. Point one. Point two.
Yeah.
Huh? Yes, Yom B'Tzorah. Yeah, thank you. They're good tidings, right? Exactly. And these weren't exactly the most from, you know, wonderful people that we look up to. Okay, again, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do that? I don't know. That's what he did. Now, what exactly does it mean that there's some form of geula? Who said that simply establishing a Jewish presence is geula? I mean, there it was this life and death. There was a war and so on and so forth. But, you know, is that the same? And what's the geula exactly? So it's interesting. There's a well-known Gemara in Mar Katan Daf Chaf Amud Aleph Source Number 9. The Gemara says, "Amar Chavu Amula Biram Rulaza Haroa Ari Yehuda BeChorbanon Amar Ari Kashkavidbar." This is the idea of tearing Kriya, when you see the Makom HaMikdash, when you see Yerushalayim, and when you see the Arei Yehuda, Arei Yehuda, the cities of Judea around Yerushalayim. That's the din in the Gemara. Markan Chavav Amir Al says, what posse get to say? The Rambam brings us Lahalocha, Perakei, Vilchot Tainis, Halacha Tezayim. Mishra Arei Yehuda, Chavona Omer, you say this and this posse, the Kareh, then you see Yerushalayim, you say that posse, can you tear? See the site of the Mikdash, you tear. We still do this mitzvah today. Okay, and it's in the Shohar, at the very end of Hilchot Tishabo. Simon Tov Kuf Samach Aleph Orachaim Siv Aleph and Siv Beis Haro Ari Yehuda Bechubana and so on and so forth. Now, what does that mean? What do you mean you see Ari Yehuda Bechubana? What does it mean? I mean, you see where there used to be city. I understand you see the Makom HaMikdash, you see the Beis HaMikdash Bechubana, you see the sites where the Beis HaMikdash once was, and you see now it's in the state of Chubin. There's no Beis HaMikdash. You see Yerushalayim, the story. So the dome, many assume that's why many people today take Kriya. When they're walking down the steps, you know, from up, you know, the Jewish quarter, you walk down the steps, right before you make that last left to go the last set of steps, you can see the dome, and you can see the coast, so that's where people take Kriya right there. You know, many assume you don't have to see the ground of the Mikdash itself. But if you're on the other side, you're by Har HaZeisim, Har HaTzof, whenever you can see there over there. But most people tell when you see the dome, that's enough to tell you that there's no base on Mikdash, right? Anyway, so you take Kriya. We do that today. You take Kriya. It's a mitzvah today also. But it says in the Mish, in the Gemara, rather, and the Rambam, and the Shulchan Aruch, you also tear over Ari Yehuda. So what does that mean by Chorbanam? What, you see ruined city? You see remnants? You see archaeological? What does it mean? So the Magen Avraham makes an important comment. If you've caught an Aleph there, it's in the Tav Kuf Samach Aleph 12. The Magen Avraham writes, B'churbanam, and he says, listen to this. Alpha Pisha Yoshin Bohen Yisrael. Even though Jews live there, there could be a Jewish community in that city. Okay? But Kevan Sha'umos Moshim Alem Mikri Churban. Since it's under the sovereignty of non-Jews, that's called Ari Yehuda B'churbanam. You can have a very nice Jewish community there, says the Magen Avraham. Can have an Erev and a pizza shop or whatever. The Jews live there. But, so close off, if it's under non-Jewish sovereignty, that's called B'churbanam. Okay? One step at a time. But that's what it says. Good. We'll get there. Okay, but one step at a time. So it's saying, but in terms of this definition of Churban, the Magen Avraham is saying that it's called Churban if it's a Jewish city, could be a fine Jewish city, but if it's under non-Jewish control, that's called. In fact, there was a big discussion when they gave Bethlehem, up to the Palestinian Authority, would that din come into effect? That's only Ari Yehuda. The assumption, I think, of most Palestinians is not, because the Tzal, even though it's under the Palestinian Authority, the Tzal can still go in, you know, Jewish, they can still go in when they need to and want to and so on. But anyway, that's its din. Now, where do we see, so that's the definition of Churban, yeah? So, from a logical point of view, if Churban is defined as a Jewish presence, as a lack of Jewish presence, a lack of Jewish sovereignty, so it's mashma that when you have Jewish sovereignty, then that's the beginning of the reversal of Churban. Right? That's the opposite. So the Gemara says in that same sugya in Markat and Chavav and Aleph, source 13, the Gemara says, Ari Yehuda Menolan, the Gemara tells a story also, a psukim also from Tanakh, okay, and this is in Yirmiyahu. It says that the people came from Shechem and Shiloh and Shomron, 80 people, Megul Chayzachan, they grew beards out of a son of Avelos, and Kuei Begal, they tore their garments. Okay, that, I printed the source of Psukim. That is right after the death of Gedaliah, as in Tzom Gedaliah. Okay, Gedaliah ben Achikam, Yirmiyahu Perek Mem Aleph, source 14. There was a man by the name of Yishmael ben Nesanya. He was the one who killed, assassinated Gedaliah. Okay, Gedaliah was the Jewish person who was put in charge after the Babylonians destroyed the first place in Mikdash, and they led the last king to go away. So they put Gedaliah in charge. He wasn't a king. I don't know what you call it exactly. A governor. It's not a governor. You know, he was under the Babylonians, but he was a Jew. Anyway, he was assassinated. So, and the group of Jews came, and they came to a place called Mitzpah. And all these people, it says in Pasuk Hey there, Perak Memal, and you know, the end of 14, they came from Shechem, from Shil, from Shomron, from the north. They came from further north, and Shmolim Ish Megul Chayzak and Kuri Vegadim. The garments were torn. They came Lahavi Beis Hashem. They were coming to the base of women. Lahavi Beis Hashem. So Rashi said they didn't know the base of Hashem had been destroyed. Not like today, where you find out instantly. You know, the people didn't know. It was war time. You know, and there was sieges. And these people came from the north, according to Rashi, and the Radak also says like that on Pasuk Hey. Apparently, they didn't know the base of Hashem was destroyed. Then they found out what happened along the way. Somebody told them, "Hey, did you hear?" So that's why they tore Kriya and, grew the were unkempt and so on, and of Churban HaBayis. That's what both Rashi and the Radak say. The Bach, however, in his commentary, and that's him in the tour, or Chaim Tov Kuf Samach Aleph, I printed in 17, learns not that way. He says, well, they wouldn't have torn yet for Yerushalayim. They didn't see it. The din is you tear for Yerushalayim and for the Beis HaMikdash when you see. So the fact that someone told them about it, they wouldn't have torn, they'd have to see it. So he, in that long that piece, in the Pinchas 17, the Bach said, no, they tore because they came to this place, Mitzpah, which is on one of the Ori Yehuda, and they tore the Kriya there because the city was now under non-Jewish sovereignty. So the Bach is with a mocker for that Mogen Avram. That's what I would tell you about Elementary. And then the Shabur brings that Mogen Avram, Halacha. Let's take a look at 18. Again, if you have time to go through the sources, you can look through. You can look through. Okay. The Mishabura says in Siman Tavkuf Samach Aleph Sukkot and Beis 18. B'Churbanam, he says like the Magen Avraham. That's the accepted view. Afilu Yoshin Bohen Yisrael came and Shai Yishmaelim. He mentions the Yishmael Arabs. Since it's Arabs now, Moshe Malim Mikra B'Churbanam. They're considered B'Churbanam. Okay. Today we don't care for Ari Yehuda because under Jewish sovereignty, some Amela. There is some sort of significance to the fact, obviously, that starting in 1948, for the first time in, you know, since really before the destruction of the Bayi Sheni, so some 2,000 years, there was Jewish sovereignty over these cities. So we see this as a halachic point. And the fact that it was brought about by non-Jewish people, okay, but right now there's Jewish sovereignty. Now, you'll tell me, but 1 second, there's a different problem. Just because, how do we, you know, is that really... You know, is that really Geula? Is the restoration of Jewish sovereignty? How do I know that that's really considered Geula and so on? And I don't know. You don't have to accept that point of view.
But this required for
that's Geula. For the full Geula. It's a step towards Geula. Right, like Geula Shleima. Right. Nobody says we have the Geula Shleima. Yeah, question. Right, till we got there. So not to you, because you right. Shleima. Why? Because you Shleima is a suffix about. Since you raised the point. I don't think so. I think it was Rishalayim Gufa. Ari Yehuda, as far as I know. Rishalayim is not, I want to say, Shikam Achokas about it. Because the question is tearing for Rishalayim, is that because it's an offshoot of the Mikdash, in which case you still have to do it today? Okay? Or is that it's because there's no Jewish sovereignty, no Jewish Malchus, in which case you wouldn't have to do it today? I think the general psak is we don't do it. Because on the other hand, on the other side of this is a question of the Sufik about Tashas, you know, ruining the garments. So, when I said that's how Moshe Feinstein writes in Chu and others, I think it was Shalazan, maybe I forgot. But it could be that he wanted to avoid that problem. I don't think it's because of Ari Yehuda. I'm not sure. But anyway, so there's another interesting passage in Melachim Beis, okay? And that is the following. Look in Perek Yud Dalet, okay? Perek Yud Dalet. Because you want to tell me that the news was brought about by non-Jewish, non-from Jews, okay. But Sof Kol Sof, who was in charge? Today, not only was it brought about by secular Jews, but more or less the country is run by secularism. Maybe that's not. I mean, the Magen Avraham says non-Jewish sovereignty is Churban. But is Jewish sovereignty the opposite of Churban, even if it's non-from Jewish sovereignty? Maybe not. In other words, maybe the Magen Avraham would argue, non-Jewish control is Churban, but in order for there to be the opposite of Churban, you have to come to some sort of a Jewish, from Jewish, Torah, huh? So take a look, but more than that, look at Melachim Beis Perek Yud Dalet. That's, you know, everyone saying the question. In other words, first we said that it was, you know, the vehicle with these non-Jews, non-from Jews, we said no worse than Gehazi. Then we said that the Magen Avraham, that the establishment of Jewish sovereignty is significant, as you see from, you know, that the Churban is non-Jewish sovereignty, so Jewish sovereignty, David Churban, but maybe that's not true about if the sovereignty is not Pshomer Torah Mitzvahs. So you see, as Joshua said, but a specific example, look at Melachim Beis Perek Yud Dalet, 19. Okay, Melech Yehuda, he was the king of Yehuda. At that time, Moloch Yerovam ben Yoash, Melech Yisrael, B'shomon Arboim V'achashana. The man by the name of Yerovam ben Yoash, the second Yerovam, became the king of the northern kingdom of Yisrael, and he reigned for 41 years in Shomon. What was the Pasuk say about his credentials? Chav Dalet. Vayas hara b'enei Hashem. Lo sar mikol chatos Yerovam ben Nevat, asher hechti is Yisrael. Not only was he a scoundrel, a sinner, he encouraged others to sin. But yet, in Pasuk Chavei, who Heshiv is Gul Yisrael? He restored the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. Milavo Chamas Ad Yom Harav Yom Harava Kivar Hashem Kesel Shidu BeArdo Yonam Anita Anove Shem Bikas Chayfer. Who Heshiv? Rashi says, and the Radak says, in that pasuk Perek Yudal, pasuk Chafei of Malachim Beis. Who Heshiv? Miyad Malchei Aram. He reconquered land that was part of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, and he brought back territory which had been part of Eretz Yisrael, which was lost. The Machan Aram, he brought it back. That's what Rashi and the Radak explain. And it's really based upon Yerushalmi, as the Radak points to the Yerushalmi. Look at the Yerushalmi in Chala, Perek Beis, Halacha Aleph, 22. Ksiv, who heishiv is gluy sovereign the Roch Hamas Adam Arik Vah Hashem, etc. Machokas, Chananya, Rav Mona. Chad Omar, Kol Masha Kibish Yoshua, Kibish, he reconquered, what they call the Reconquista, right? He reconquered all the land that had been conquered by Yoshua when they first came in, and he restored it to Jewish control, this guy. And Chana, the other guy, so the other Amora says, Yosef Masha Kibish Yoshua Kibish there. Not only did he got back what Yoshua had conquered, he increased it. Okay, that he increased it. And that's the Pre-Yoshua explains, right, that he got more than, according to the second view, he got more than Yoshua, right? And it's interesting, if you look in Sefer Yoshua, Perikid Gimel Pasuk Aleph, I printed it in source 24, Yoshua, when Yoshua was old, Yoshua Zokei in Bob Ayomim, etc., when Shalav Atoza Kanta, Vosu Ayomim, Ve'oretz Nish Arah Harbei Ma'od L'Rishtah. You know, the job isn't done. You're an old man already, but you haven't finished conquering the land. Rashi explains, what I promised Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, we haven't done the job yet. It says Reb Chaim, interesting enough. So in the name of his son, Abis Kerab, printed in Gittin, Mem Zayin and Aleph, from the Sugi V'yesh Kinyan Akum, and served by Kibbutz Sheri, 26. V'harei v'mei David, Lo Nigvar Adayin HaKibush Shos Azayin Amamin. The conquest of the seven nations was not finished by Yeshua. Even by the days of Dovah Malacha wasn't finished. Okay, the Hera HaGovan HaBezin. It's a reference to the Brisker Rav. A Mokor, he quotes this Yushalmi and Chala. And look what he says. Look at the last line, 26. V'HaKavana B'zeh, Dehu Gomar Kibush Zayin Amamin. This Yerubim Ben Yorosh completed the conquest of the seven nations. Now go back, what did it say about Yerubim ben Yoash? He was like Yerubim Avot, he was Hechtias Aram, Bayas Harab Ein Hashem, and yet we're saying that he completed on behalf of Kal Yisrael. We're not going to say that wasn't, because he wasn't a firm guy, it didn't count. Who Gomar, Kibur Zayin Amin, he finished the conquest. You see there also, that even if the leaders, it's not just that, like the story with Gay Chazi, that he played some kind of role, even if the leaders are not the most wonderful role models, they're not firm people, they're not Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, nonetheless, their conquest or their Geula counts. You see from the Sukkim, he completed the conquest of the seven nations. This scoundrel.
Herod.
No, that, huh?
Herod.
It's later. But that's about Shane. But the question is, Herod, though, the question wasn't Jewish at all. Herod's a different story. But I'm saying here, this person is Jewish, but he's not an observant Jew. Now, yeah, but I don't know the Herod. He was no question that Yerubim ben Yoash was Jewish. No question about it.
Just wasn't observant.
Yeah, I don't go to Herod. It's a complicated story. I just want to mention one other thing about the king. You know, there's a famous mission in Rosh Hashanah. Everybody knows the first mission in Rosh Hashanah, based on Olive. Arab Rosh Hashanah, right? There are 4 days in the Jewish calendar, which counts as Rosh Hashanah for one purpose or another. Right? Just like we have in the secular calendar. We also have days which are considered the new year for different purposes. Right? January 1st is the new year for the calendar year. But July 1st is the first of the fiscal year. Right, and the academic year starts in September, right? So we also have different years. So it's the same thing in Lavan Halacha. So one thing that says Echad Nisan is Rosh Hashanah. The first of Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah for kings, and Echad Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah. What does that mean practically? So Rashi fills in some of the blanks there in Beis Halav. He says L'Malachim. What does it mean for kings? Because you fill the star out. You had to fill out. It was the reign of King So and So, and we don't know what year, right? Year of the reign of King so-and-so, because they had to keep documents clear for dates. Obviously, you have a fight later on in court, who has a previous contract, there's a lien on the property, so you have to know the date. For a king, so Rosh Hashanah, Echad B'Nisan is the turning point. Even if you don't count from the day he took over. But the new year begins, so even if he took over 3 months ago, you've only been on the throne 3 months. Rosh Chodesh Nisan arrived, that's the second year already, right? Anyway, the Gemara later, that's what the Gemara says in Beis Amin Aleph, 29. For dating documents, right? What do we care if we have the special date for kings? What does it mean? The answer is because it's for storos, for document purpose, to know which is dated when. That's the Gemara in Daf Beis. And Daf Ches, in the next source, 31, the Daf Ches Amin Aleph, the Gemara says, Becha Tishrei Rosh Hashanah Lachem. But that's the first of Nisan. The first of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah Lashanah, I mean. L'may Hilchoso, what is the halacha we learn from there? Amar Papa Lishtaros. The dating documents. Where I says, wait a second. You just said dating documents. What's going on here? You told me dating documents the first of Nisan. Where I says, no. Lo kasha, kama malchi Yisrael, kama malchi was olam. Malchi Yisrael, Nisan is significant for the Jews. Pesach, Gula. So for Jewish king, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. But dating the date of a non-Jewish king who's an emperor so-and-so, That goes by Tishrei.
Now,
so Sarah wants to be accepted in a secular court. Okay, again, the details of the documents are not important for us now, other than to point out, notice that the Gemara doesn't say, well, it's going to depend if the king is a firm guy or not a firm. A Malchei Yisrael goes by Nisa, and that's it. Doesn't say only if he's shomer Torah mitzvah. My point being what? He's still considered a melech. He's still considered a melech Yisrael. So therefore, even Yerov Ben Yoash, this miserable person, Vayas Harabe and Hashem, and he's Hechtias Harabim, and sound like his namesake, the original Yerov, still, his conquest was considered a Jewish conquest. So therefore, again, the establishment of a Jewish sovereignty is the undoing of the Chorban, even if the sovereignty is not under the hands of people who are necessarily the best people. But now we'll come to the question you asked, Monty, but Sof Kosov, he's a melech, still a melech. Today there's no melech. So you want to argue, yeah, he was a sinner, he was this, that, and anything. Sof Kosov, he's a melech, and the status of melech for documents for other purposes too. So there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Chofim and Beis, 33. The Gemara says, Tanya, also famous Gemara, you're all famous Gemara, Tanya, Rabbi Yosef Omer, Yosef, Shosh mitzvahs nistav Yisrael b'chnei tzos ha'aretz. There are three mitzvahs the Jewish people are commanded to fulfill upon entering the Eretz Yisrael. And they're talking here not about the Shemitah and Trumas, you know, the agricultural mitzvahs. The three national mitzvahs. One, Lahamid Lahem Melech, to appoint the king. Then, Lahachriz Zarish HaLamalek, to get rid of the enemies, Amalek. And then, Livnos Lahem Beis HaBechiri, to build the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says, Eni Odeh Eizem and Tchila, which comes first. So without going to the whole source now, to Chavim Beis, the Gemara learns from Psukim that this order is imperative. It has to be in this order. King, then Amalek, then Beis HaMikdash. So for our purpose, let's leave Amalek out of the equation for the moment. A Jewish king has to be before building the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, that's what emerges from that Gemara. That's what Rashi explains. That's what emerges in that Gemara. The Rambam brings us to Halacha. Hilchos Melachim, Perak Halacha Aleph, Shalosh Mitzvahs and Stavu, and saying, quotes the three mitzvahs and Psukim, where they come from. Halacha Beis, right? Minu Melach, Kodu Lachem HaSamal. You have to appoint the king first, then you fight Amalek, which, by the way, one of the first jobs of Shaul, when he became the king, was to fight Amalek. We read on Parsha Zohar, Zav Torah. Unfortunately, he didn't do the job, but that's what he's supposed to do. Anyway, and then later on, as the Pasuk says by David HaMelech, the last line of 35 in the Rambam, Perak Aleph, Hilchos Melach, Melach HaBeis, for Kiyosha Melech HaBeis, Hashem Yinichlo Misavid, Mikol Oivav, when David HaMelech had now conquered, he had no more trouble with his enemies, then he said, how can I sit in this beautiful palace, not because Baruch Hu doesn't have a Beis HaMikdash, and then Hashem told you, you're not going to build it, your son will build it, etc. Anyway, you see from that Gemara that you need a Melech to build the Beis HaMikdash. It has to be a Melech. However, it's interesting. There's a Gemara, the Yerushalmi, another Yerushalmi, this one in Maaseh Sheni, Perek Hei Halacha Beis, 36, where the Yerushalmi says, Amar Bacha, Zos Omeris in the future, Shem Beis HaMikdash also be born as Kodom Achos Beis David. You see the Pasuk, Hazinu V'dam, Enot Tish Techom, the Emosha explains how we learn that from the Pasuk. But Yerushalmi says that the Beis HaMikdash will be built before Malchus Beis David is restored. Okay, before Moshe comes. According to this approach, that's one of the machlokas about it. We spoke about it in the past, but that's what this Gemara says in Maaseh Sheni. Malchus Beis David, that the Beis HaMikdash would build first. But wait a second, I thought you just said the Gemara Sanhedrin says it got on the king before. So how could it be? Not only that Yerushalmi, but in the Bavli, okay, Megillah Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis going over to Chesam Aleph. We know from the Shemana Esrei, right? We say the bracha first. We Lishalayim Yircha Barachim Toshu Bracha Devarim Shem. Then what? Then a Semach David Avdecha. The other way around, I thought, right? How do we say Vilushalayim Ircha first, and then a Semach David Avdecha? Right? To the Gemara has, and Yizayin Beis going over to Chesman Alpha Megillah. The Kevin Shanivnis Yushalayim, that Gemara also says, once Yushalayim is built, Bod David, then Bod David. Say, it'll come, Shanemar, Mashiach will come, Acha Yeshu Ben Eisol, Vixus, Hashem Elokeim, as David Malcolm. Okay, Acha, afterwards. So now we have a question. But I thought the Gemara said you have to have a king before you build the Beis HaMikdash. So how can you have to have the Mashiach?
Huh?
Well, yeah, but why should we? The Gemara didn't say that, though. And logically, why should we be different? There's a staggering comment the Ramban makes, which has a bearing on our discussion. The Ramban, in Parshas Korach, okay, what's doing there? Not my issue now. It's Perek Tez Zayin of Bemidbar, Pasuk Kof Aleph. Divam Asli, he brought them into Eidah Azos. It's the story of Korach. So here the Ramban, as part of a longer essay, says the following. Vani Omer Derech Svar. He says, that the Jewish people were very punished. They didn't build the Beis HaMikdash. You know, it took them 400 years to build the Beis HaMikdash. A little more than 400 years, actually, 440, the time they entered into Eretz Yisrael. And Ramban says the time that the Aron was in place in different places, it was here and there, and nobody did it. Nobody did anything. And it's a taina. He says a taina against, until David HaMelech woke up, nobody built the Beis HaMikdash. And he said, that's a taina. And David couldn't do it because, you know, he had blood on his hands or whatever else. But look at the last couple of lines, okay, what the Ramban says. The Elu Hayu saw chafetz in the David, the Jews would have wanted. When he's Orubo and they, you know, got into it, Mitchila Hayu Nase Bimei Echad Mehashoftim. They could have built the Beis HaMikdash in the days of the Shoftim. Wait a minute, I thought the Gemara says you have to have a Melech. So what do you see from there? What do you see from there? That's in Ramban. The Melech is Lav Dafka Melech in the sense of a Melech, you know, has to have Malchus based on it. A Melech means what? Whoever sovereignty, exactly. Whoever in charge could have done the one that soaked him. Or Shaul wasn't a Malchus based on it, if they would have won. That's it emerges in that Ramban. Okay? And it appears like that, also, you see? So what I'm saying is that perhaps that Gemara, which says a Melech has to precede the building of the Beis HaMikdash, Melech may not mean Melech in the classic sense. It could be a Jew who has sovereignty over the land, like one of the Shoftim. There's a Gemara, the Pasuk in Parshas Pinchas, when Moshe Rabbeinu appoints Yoshua to be his successor, so it says in Parakov Zayim, Amir, Pasuk of Allah 41, the Lisnei Elazar Kohen, Yamod Rishalob Mishpat Haurim, right? And this Yeshua will stand in front of Elazar. Aaron is already dead. You'll see Elazar is a subsequent Kohen, and he's going to consult with the Urim and Tumim, right? And they'll decide. So when he consulted with the Tumim, Rashi explains there, Rishalob Kishid Storich Lotis Mechama. You have to, you know, that he has to check with the Tumim. Should we go out to war and so on? So that's what's going to happen. But the Gemara Yuman Ein Gimel Bey says, Ve'ein Sholom Elam Melech. But the only one who can ask this question of the Urim and Tumim is the Melech. It's done to the Kohen Gadol. It has to be a Melech. How do we know? Manon Emile Gemara says, Amar Bavo, this is Yuma Ein Gimel Beis, 43. Domar Kol, is Ne'el Azar Kohen, Yamud Rishol HaMishar Urim. Who? Who's the who? Who is the who? Eva Vahala? Zeh Melech. Chol Yisrael Ito, Zeh Mashua. Mechol Mechol Eda Sun Hedjim. The king is the Melech. It's the king. It's Tomei Yeshua, as Rashi says there. Who Zeh Melech? Tohav Yeshua Mishtoi Kroh. So the Ramban, again back to Ramban. The Ramban writes in his Asogos, his addenda to the Sefer HaMitzvah of the Rambam, 45. Now the Ramban disagreed. The Rambam wrote a Sefer HaMitzvah. The Ramban in a number of places disagreed. And the Rambam, she says, the Rambam shouldn't have counted as a separate mitzvah. He should have counted that as a separate mitzvah, whatever he argues. And somehow they get up to the number 613. That's not my problem now, but they work it out. So one of the things the Ramban writes is about checking, going out to the Nuchoma, check with the Urim V'Tumim. That should be counted as a mitzvah. Now, I'm not interested in that machlokas, but look at the first line of the Ramban of 45. The Eishli Inyan Mitzvah Mistapek Alai V'Hu Shiyei Royali Shemitzvah Al HaMelech O Al HaShofet Umi Sheha'am Birshu So Lohotziyam Litzvah Tlatzavah B'Mechem Shushus V'Mitzvah and so on V'Yoshol Urim V'Tumim. Who should consult the Urim V'Tumim? The Gemara says, based on a part of the Melech. What's Ramban said? It doesn't mean a Melech. It means it could be a shofet too, or look language here. Misha on birshu so. That's how seven others point this out. Not my chidushim. People point this out, right? So what do you see from there? So you can have, and there's a long essay from Rav Kook in one of his tshuvas Mishpat Kohen, Siman Kuf Mem Dal. I printed some relevant parts in 46, and he says there are a number of things that you don't need a king. Certain management of the kol. Look at the second in the paragraph. Amasha nogeya lahanhagas haklal. Whoever the manig is, whoever there doesn't be a king in a technical sense, right? Shem Klaut Sarchuma Jushan Shaitam Amarola, when we call Mokma, Sarah Kayamas, he writes. Dilinian Mishpat Hamalucha, Shinogel, and Hogas Haklau, Vada Gama Shoftim, Muskamim, Unisim, Kalim, Vako Malachem Omdim. So, you know, for sovereignty, you don't need a king. That's my point. According to these Rambans, according to what Kook develops and so on in this Shuvah. And then he goes right and he quotes the Gemara, and the Gemara is to back him up and so on. So, now we can come back to our point and say, so we're saying the Melech doesn't have to be a technical Melech. It could be someone else who has authority, a Jew who has sovereignty over the land. And therefore, that could happen before the Mashiach could come. The Beis HaMikdash can be built according to Yerushalmi Ma'aseh Sheni, according to Gemara Megillah, which matches the order of the Shulchan Aruch. We say, Melech may not mean okay, so we can build the Beis HaMikdash under the leadership of somebody else who's a sovereign over it. Then Mashiach will come. Others say the order is Makkah. I don't go into that now. They can talk about that too. Yeah. So I definitely don't go into that. But my point being that according to this approach, going back to our issue, so the establishment of Jewish sovereignty of Eretz Yisrael 1948, even though it wasn't a Melech. Okay, because again, you could argue that it has to be at least a Melech, even if it wasn't a wonderful person. And I would say, no, it doesn't have to be a melech. So any kind of Jewish sovereignty, the Chora, could fit into that idea of reversal of Chorban. Now you'll ask me one second. We're usually accustomed to thinking that the Geula will come with miracles and, you know, wonderful supernatural events. Where was that? Now, there are those who say that 1948, there maybe were some miracles, but there was certainly nothing comparable to splitting the Red Sea or the sun standing still, by Yeshua. So what happened to the, the Nisan? There were no outright supernatural miracles. So how could this be the Geula? It was established without any, outward divine sign. So the Gemara addresses that also. Sanhedrin Sarechesam and Allah, 47. The Gemara says, Amor Zandri. He has theories in Psukim. Well, first of all, let's just skip down for 49 a second. A Pasuk Yeshaya Perak Samach, Pasuk Chof Beis. It's one of the Psukim from the seven Haftarahs between Tisha B'Av and Rosh Hashanah. This is so called Shiv Nechemta. I think it's the second last one. It says, Akot Nigel Elof, Lo Elof, Vatur, Lego Otso, Ani Hashem, Be'ito Achishenu. Talking about the future redemption, it's I am Hashem, Be'ita, with Ayin, in its time, Achishena, I will hasten it. So the Gemara asks, okay, Rashi in Yeshaya says it in 50, but it's based on a Gemara. Look in 47. Sanhedrin Sadech Hesmeis. Amal Azandri. Rishur ben Levi Rami. Rishur ben Levi raised the steer. Ksiv Be'ita, Uksiv Achishena. It says that the redemption will happen in its appointed time, Be'ita, and then it says, I will hasten it. So, well, which is it? I mean, if you hasten it, then it's not its appointed time. It's appointed time. It's not hasten. So my answer is very simple. Zochu Achishena. Lo zachu beita. Depends whether we're deserving of it. If Klal Yisrael is on such a madrega that deserving of the geula being hastened, it'll come more quickly. If not, it'll come in whatever the appointed time is. And the same thing, of Alexandria goes on to raise another steer. There's a pasuk in Daniel 51, Parag Zion of Daniel, pasuk of Gimel. Daniel's in Aramaic. Okay, well, that part of it, most of it is in Aramaic. So it speaks about Chazeh Havas Bechazvah that I saw in a dream, Baru Imanone Shemaya. Descending in the clouds, the divine clouds, kivar enosh, a person, right? And as Rashi says in the 52, kivar enosh also, hu melech ha-mashiach, meaning that the melech ha-mashiach will descend in clouds and so on. There'll be supernatural events, so to speak. Right? According to the pasuk in Daniel, it'll somehow come down in the clouds. That's one way to learn the psukim. However, there's a pasuk in Zechariah, Perek Tes, pasuk Tes, 53. Okay, Gili Ma'od Basir Harib Basuslam, he named Malkech Yavol Chot Tzadik, your king is going to come, a Tzadik, and so on. Ani the Rochev Al Chamor, like a poor person riding on a donkey. That's not coming down in the cloud of, cloud of divine cloud. So again, so Reb Alexander, yes, so which is it? Right? Same problem. Rabbi Shuvah Levi Ram, in the second line back to 47. Ksiv Arum and Shmaya Kivayanish also. Ksiv Ani Rocha Chamor. So he says, answer, same answer. Zochu Imanai Shmaya, if we're deserving of supernatural events surrounding the Gula, it will happen that way. If not, it will happen through natural order. If not, Ani Rocha Chamor. So again, my point being that the absence, again, none of these are original ideas. I'm just putting these together. The many claim that the absence of supernatural is okay. Maybe we don't deserve any better. We got what we deserved, and it can happen through non-supernatural means as well. You know, Chaim HaKadosh says the same thing.
Mashiach, even if he's on a chamor, still different than a secular.
Okay, right. I understand that, but I dealt with that problem. I'm just saying the absence of supernatural doesn't necessarily prove anything. Yeah.
What
happened first? Yeah, I say that what I quoted before, even from the Meister Shem, where the king.
Coming
back to yeah, that's a different thing. We'll have to do tshuva. That's another, will there be a mass tshuva movement? So it's yes, but it plays in this. But again, the absence of if it doesn't happen, take a look in the Or HaChaim. Okay, the Or HaChaim is a Parshas Balak. Parakov Dala Posig Zion. Talking about the Nevuah at the very end, Bilam force tells after he tried to curse the Jews three times and it didn't work. So then he blurts out some Nevuah. So it's a famous one, is right. Famous Posig again. Become shaved of Yisrael. They're talking about the future Gulas. So the Archaim says on that Posig, the Eren of Alato basically spells out that it could happen naturally. If it happened naturally, there's the geula of Be'ita, there's the geula of Ani Rocha V'Chamor, there's a geula without the tshuva movement and so on, and that relates to that Gemara, and that may play out that way. That's how he says also. He says, it depends whether it was Zocher or not. Okay? And he said, that's the double language of the Pasuk and so on. So you can read that Or HaChaim will address it. It doesn't quote what you're referring to, but that's the point. The point is it's going to be, it could be a geula without outward supernatural events right now. Now, as I stressed before, this isn't the Gula Shlema, right? There's no Beis HaMikdash, but it's a step. Maybe though, maybe at some point we'll all be zocha to more supernatural events. You know, I said, I mentioned the yeshiva this morning, right? The step, I don't know how many more steps there are going to be. You know, it could be 10 more steps or 50 more steps. I don't know what it's going to take either. But that it's a step, I think a strong case can be made. But then you're going to ask me, that how could we count this as anything? What about the famous Shalosh rules, right? The so-called three oaths. Take a look, sources 57, 58, and 59. Those are three psukim from Shir HaShirim. Parak Beis, plus Exayim, we've had a Shir HaShirim in the Pesach, right? Shir HaShirim, Parak Beis, plus Exayim, Shir HaShirim, Parak Gimel, plus Akei, and Shir HaShirim, Parak Ches, plus Adal. Almost identical psukim. First two are identical, the third one is missing a part, but it begins the same way. Hishbati Eschem and Osu Shalim. Hishbati. I have, what's the English word? I have adjured you with an oath. I have bound you by an oath. Okay, so three shvuas are alluded to here. Three oaths, because the pasuk is three times in Shir HaShirim. So the Gemara says in Ksubas, Nav Kuf Yud Aleph Men Aleph, Ha'u Ba'alech Revis V'chanina Da'amar, Gimel Shvuas Halalu Lama. What's these three oaths? He said there are three oaths. Achas Shalo Yalu Yisrael B'choma. The Jews, the Rashi says, Yach B'yad Chazokim. The Jews will not forcibly take Eretz Yisrael, conquer Eretz Yisrael. An oath. The Jews will not rebel against their non-Jewish masters and so on and so forth. The third thing, the Achas, third oath, they shouldn't enslave the Jews too much, shouldn't give the Jews too hard a time. Well, these Shalosh Shuas, so-called the Shalosh Shuas, is the basis for the opinion of Satmar and the old Satmar, the old Tadamim. I have to say, he was an Arum Gadol Megaor, a Talmud Chacham. You know, we can disagree with what he said about Eretz Yisrael, but you know, he was a great Talmud Chacham. And that position, which many people follow, is that these Shalosh Shuas preclude our taking the land by force or any kind of military, and so on. And he didn't make this up. There's a sefer called Megillas Esther 62, which has to do with Purim. This Megillas Esther is a commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvah of the Rambam. Like I said before, the Rambam wrote a Sefer HaMitzvah. The Ramban wrote critique and disagreed in some places. So the Rav Moshe de Leon was his name, and he in effect tried to answer wherever the Ramban had an objection to a tine against the Rambam for counting this mitzvah, not counting that mitzvah. He tries to explain the Rambam shita, and I think he writes in Agdoma that while he was writing it, just before he started writing, his mother, whose name was Esther, died. So he called this work the Megillas Esther in honor and memory of his mother. Anyway, it has nothing to do with Purim. No, that's somebody else, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Also Moshe?
Also Moshe de Leon.
Definitely the same name. Was it de Leon? Was Moshe? Yeah, I don't think it's the same person. I don't know. Anyway, so he wrote this defense. So in the Shichas Essen section, Mitzvah Dalet, the Ramban feels that that Jews settling in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah. Even Bizman Hazeh. The Ramban never counted it. There's a lot of literature why the Ramban didn't count it. But the Ram didn't. He never listed settling in Eretz Yisrael. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah. And Ramban said, what do you mean? It's a mitzvah. He quotes Pesukim and so on. So the Megillas Esther explains why the Ramam leave it out. He said, because the mitzvah to settle the land, that was only in the days of Moshe and Yoshua, as long as we hadn't been exiled. But once we were thrown out of the land, the mitzvah doesn't apply. And that's why the Ram doesn't count it, because the Ramam only counts mitzvahs which are Ladoras, which are all-time mitzvahs. They'll never disappear. For example, we just had Pesach, right? In the time of the Pesach in Mitzrayim, they had to take the blood from the Korban Pesach and put it in the doorpost. That was a mitzvah. They had to do it. That's not counted in the Tayag mitzvahs. We don't do that. It was one and out, right? So any mitzvah which is not for all time, the Rambam doesn't count. So the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, according to Megillas Esther, the Rambam holds, that was a mitzvah back then. But once we're driven out of the land, until the end of days, the mitzvah no longer exists. The Rambam doesn't count it. And in the context of his presentation, Megillas Esther writes, not only we were driven out, we were commanded by the Gemara in Ksuba, so we can't take it by force. So he takes this Gemara very literally. And building on that, others say the same thing. So you can't take it by force. All the arguments I presented to you, but it's in violation of the Shalosh Shuas. It's in violation of these oaths. The Gemara has in Ksuba. It's Kuf Yud Aleph. So, well, the Tal fought with the wars and so on and so forth. Okay, good. Good. So there are a number of answers to this Tanya, but this again. But I want to clarify. Very good. That's what. Yes, and that's the people said it. So, but again, according to some, you know, doing any kind of forceful action, you know, to hold our Eretz Yisrael, that's in violation of these Shalosh rules. There are many reasons why many people think that it's problematical to use that as a basis for objecting.
You're not allowed to say that.
You're hard pressed to say that. It can't be. You know, but okay, I'm not. You know, but first of all, the fact is, this is an Agadic Gemara to begin with. Okay, the Rambam doesn't quote it in the Mishnah Torah. It's not in the Shulchan Aruch. You know, it's Agadato. It's Darshanim, Psukim, and Shir Hashirim. You know, it's a little difficult to say that that forms a halachic. Okay, but somewhere over the Rambam Gadol said it's a Yisod Emunah almost. You know, it's a real fundamental point. But it's a little hard. Now, I'm not saying nobody quotes. The Rambam quotes it in one of his letters. And that not following false messiahs and so on. But it's not quoted in the mainstream poskim against Shulchan Aruch. They don't go and quote this. Number two, the Haflah, the Pinchas Levi Horowitz, was a Rebbe of Chassam Sofer, and not Sugin Ksubas Kufir Aleph, 63, says, not talking about not coming to Eretz Yisrael from anywhere. It's only Bavel, because Bavel was a Torah center, so you shouldn't leave to go to Eretz Yisrael. There's no Torah, it's a special din in Bavel. The Avnei Nezer mentions 3 points in one of his tshuvas. Yerodeya Simon Tof Nun Dalet, 64, Os Mem. The Avnei Nezer says, he says, first of all, right, these are all agadic. It's hard to determine halachas from an agadic passage, like I said before. Okay, and agadic is secret. There are hidden meanings. We don't know everything. And later in Os Membeis, he says, number two, this agadic passage, he says, to take these shalosh shvuos and so on, he says, you know, it's a very, very difficult. Because he also talks about Bavel, but and therefore from other Medinos, the question is, will you violate the Shul? He quotes the Haflah, but he says, number five lines, what is this Shul that the Gemara is talking about? When did it happen? Do we ever find in Kisra Kodesh there was an assembly of Jews and some sort of Shul was imposed? Where is it, he says. He said, other Shuls, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu, we see in the Tzuka, right? Moshe Sheshbiya so kibla Torah, and it's a Shua, right? It says in the Torah, Ela Divra Bris. And again, a Har Grizim and Har Evo. We have covenants that are in the Torah. Okay, where was this historically? Where? Right? He said the Nezer. It's very difficult to say that there was an assembly of all Klal Yisrael that they all accepted the Shua. Where? Okay, it's historically we don't understand it. And especially with the non-Jews, all non-Jews are bound by an oath too. When were they brought into the mix? It's very, very difficult. The whole Gemara is difficult. Furthermore, he says what you said. Look in Nunvav. Ibra the cholzehu rak kashein lo rishus me'mem shalah. All this is only when Jews don't have permission from the governing body. But they were gedolim. Okay, I don't have it with me, but there's an article I have here that I did bring. Milchama or halacha from Rav Zevin. Was printed in a Torah journal called Torah Shul HaPeh, I think. Okay, yeah, in the Torah journal called Torah Shul HaPeh, and years ago, and Rav Zevin writes, he says there was in the biography of the Or Sameach, he quotes a biography of the Or Sameach, there was a letter of Kol Kore that said after the Balfour Declaration, which the British were in charge at that time. They had sovereignty already as well. After that, he says, his language is, the other meeting in San Remo, he says that we can go ahead and establish a Jewish state. Kevon Shesar Pachar HaShavuos. Any fear that we had, because Yisrael was out. It's not forced anymore. Whatever force now is self-defense. You can defend yourself. So that's what he quotes in the Meshech Chochma. He also mentions the Maharal, which I did print over in the Chiddush HaGadol, Kuf Yud Aleph Alef Maharal 65. He said the Shalosh Shvuos, that's a punishment. But if you can beat the punishment, get out of the punishment. You know, it's like, remember years ago it was popular when Maharal was having our babies, you know, the natural childbirth, you know, when the husband had a coach at home, mice in the home, still popular. I don't know. The girls don't do it as much anymore. It's my daughter doesn't do it the same way. But anyway, so the whole thing, and the question is, but we take pills or whatever, shots or whatever to minimize the pain of childbirth. But there's an against the pasuk of Chumash. It says these bats have told me, but they'll kill me. You know, it's supposed to. So what do we have to do? It says it's a punishment. If you can get out of it, it's not good, right? Anyway, that's the Maharal similar over here. Okay. Other answers to this Shalosh Shvuos issue. The Rav Zevin himself says, one second. He said, did the Goyim keep the third one, not to mistreat us over the years? They didn't keep theirs. So when I think about it, it's a shvur, it's a contract, it's a two-sided agreement. They broke your end, then the whole thing is bottled. There are many reasons to suggest the Shalosh Shvuos doesn't apply anymore. So now the question is, we refer to this as some form of geula, reversal of churban. So here we have to come to an important point and understand that geula, what does geula mean? What exactly is geula? What exactly is geula? We talk about geula. This is aschal to the geula, which is a term in the Gemara, by the way. They talk about war. Aschal to the geula. It's the beginning of the geula. It's the first step. What people say in the tefillah, reishis tzmichas geula aseinu. What exactly does geula mean? So there's an interesting Ramban, again the Ramban, okay? In the Surah 66, Ramban wonders about the nickname, he says, introduction to Sefer Shmos. His commentary on Chumash. And he says it again at the end of Sefer Shmos. Brief. Ramban wonders, why is the book of Shmos, you know, in Chazal had nicknames for the books, each of the books of the Chumash, which are not what we call it. We call the five books of the Chumash by the nickname of the opening word, Bereishis, Shmos, Le'el, Shmos, Vayikra, right? But in English, the nicknames don't match. Bereishis, it works. It happens in Genesis, the beginning. But Shmos does not mean Exodus. Shmos means names. Vayikra means he called. It doesn't mean Leviticus. But Midbar means in the desert. It doesn't mean numbers. And Devar means these are the words. It doesn't mean Deuteronomy. So where do those English names come from? The answer is, comes from Chazal's nickname. Chazal's nickname. So the book of Deuteronomy, which is from the Greek Deuter too, is Mishneh Torah. Second part, that's what comes from. Numbers, Chazal, Bamidbar is called Chumash HaPekudim, which is the book of numbers, book of census, counting. Vayikra, Leviticus, Taras Kanan, pertaining to the Levites. So Shmos is called Sefer Geula, which is Exodus, good. But the Ramban says, one second, but Sefer Geula is a good nickname for the first half of the book. Talks about the enslavement in Mitzrayim, the arrival of Moshe and Aaron, going to Paro, let my people go, the 10 plagues, it's Yitzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamso, I get that, that's good, Geula, good. And you're throwing the task of Parshis HaSas HaDibros, because the whole purpose was to get the Torah, good, and Mishpatim is attached to HaSas HaDibros. But the end of Shmos is about the building of the Mishkan. Right? Shuma, Tetzaveh, the beginning of Kisisa, Vayakal, Pekudah, all that, what's that got to do with Geula? Ramban says, no, everything. That has everything to do with Geula. Because the real Geula is when you have a place, when you restore the Avodah like to the level of the Avos, that is a place to serve our Kadosh Baruch Hu and so on, the Kvod Hashem is visible. That's where the Mishkan is at the Beis HaMikdash. That's ultimate Geula. In fact, there's a Machlokas in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Yudah and Beis going over Yudah Aleph and Aleph. Machlokas, Rabbi Lezer Yeshua, whether the world was created in Tishrei or the world was created in Nisan. And a whole bunch of things the Gemara lists off there. This one says happened Tishrei, that one says this happened in Nisan. And so the one opinion Rabbi Lezer holds, B'Nisan Nigalu, in the past we were redeemed in Nisan, that's an argument, but in the future it'll be in Tishrei, the Tishrei seems like on the other opinion, if Yeshua says no, just like in the past in Nisan, in the future will be Nisan also. What does it mean, Nigalu? So the Gurus Ari in Tainus Yud Zayin and Aleph, okay, this is an article, Shechter has him and colors on the subject, he says that, he also discussed this issue, that Binyan Beis HaMikdash can come before Malchus Beis David. Okay, discussing that issue that we alluded to before, you mentioned before, and he says that Geula, well, yeah, okay.
You have to have a Makom.
Right, okay. But it's going to be. Right, we have a Makom. Well, okay. But he says the Geula, right, but he says the Geula means the building of the Beis HaMikdash, that the Beis HaMikdash will be built in Tishrei or in Nisan. That's what it means. I don't understand the question. It was,
it sounds like the Ramban was saying that the first almost the base of
the Geula is not complete.
No,
it's not going
to
be complete.
To start the Geula, you have to...
Oh, no, we have a role, right. Okay. No, you have to start the process. I don't think the actual binyan has to be first. I don't think so. Now, in any event, so the case can be made, therefore, that if we believe that what happened in 1948 was a step towards binyan Beis HaMikdash, and all the things we said, the fact it was non-Jews, despite, not from Jews, despite the fact there's no miracles, there's still a reversal of Churban, but there's still one problem. It's only going to be Geula if it turns out that the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. We have no way of knowing that. But the Ramban, it's in the book called Sefer Geula, in the Kisei Ramban, he alludes to a little bit in his commentary on Parshas Chosai, because I'll say there are two tochuchas, right? One at the end of Bamidbar, I'm sorry, one at the end of Vayikra, Tarpash Bechu Kosa, we're reading a couple of weeks, one in the end of Dvarim in Kisavo. So tradition is there will only be two Churbans, two Tochachas. Two Tochachas are a long list of punishments, only two. There'll never be a third. So if we believe that this is a first step towards Geula, this is it. We don't know when it's going to finish, but it can't be reversed. Now, what do you mean? So there's an interesting story, 71. Yitzhak Isaac Halevi Herzog. Herzog was the first chief rabbi in the state of Israel. because Rav Kook was before, but Rav Kook didn't live to see the state. Rav Kook died before in the late 1939. He didn't live to see the establishment of the state in 1948. The chief rabbi was alive at that common sense of Yitzhak Ani Dalyberg, a genius, originally from Ireland, a self-taught genius in many areas of he has a PhD. He had a PhD from the University of Dublin. Okay, what about Tchelet? That was his PhD topic. You know, science, a genius. Spoke many languages. Anyways, his tshuva is called Heichal Yitzchak. So in the Hakdama to the tshuva in Aruch Hanukkah, printed in 71, interesting story. He did a lot to try and save Jews during the Holocaust. He was in Eretz Yisrael. And it said that in Tufshin Aleph, 1941, he went to England, the United States, to try and get people to give money to help rescue Jews from the Holocaust and so on. Whole story. Okay? And when he was in the United States, so at that point, those who know the history of World War II, so the Germans were conquering North Africa, Rommel, General Rommel, the Desert Fox, was conquering North Africa. They were very close to Eretz Yisrael, and the plan was to go into Israel. Right? After they finished conquering, then he was outfoxed, right? He lost and never got to Israel. But every indication was that the German troops were going to come into Israel. Well, all the Jews of Eretz Yisrael would have been annihilated, right? I mean, you know, there was every indication that it was coming from North Africa and Eretz Yisrael. We need to study about it. And then the battle of El Alamein, I think, you know, it was turned around. But they never got to Eretz Yisrael. But the assumption was that he would. So people told him, Herzog, stay here. You're safe in America. Don't go back to Israel. It's going to fall any day now. They're going to come in any time. And he says, we have a tradition that there won't be a third Churban. And he went back. Okay, now and he did. He said, "We have a tradition. Lefi Makoros Hayadus, the last two lines. Lefi Makoros Hayadus, lo yeh Churban Shlishi. There's not going to be a third Churban." Now the story is that when they were firing Yerushalayim, so the Biskei Rav of Novos Holonetsik, because later wanted to run out, and the Herzog told him, "What do you mean? There's even not going to be a Churban. I have a tradition. Not going to be another third." He said, "I also have a tradition. My tradition is when they shoot guns, you run away." But the point is, an individual could get hurt, but there'll never be another Churban of the Jewish world. Now, the last thing to look at, and this will finish up, okay, is establishing. So we've agreed or we've demonstrated that you have strong ground. I mean, you know, everything I said here could be disagreed about. There's strong evidence that the establishment of Jewish presence, and I just saw, for God is my home, is something that is remarkable and happened 70 years ago and is worth, not only remarkable, but it should be remarked. It should be marked. It should be observed. There's a question, but can we today establish some sort of day as a commemoration? Is that mutter? So, for example, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Tes Amud is the end of a long sugya. Tells us that there used to be in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, a scroll called Megillas Tainus, which was a list of days on which you couldn't fast because it was a mini yontif. What was a mini yontif? Because they did something to fix the Beis Hamikdash. It wasn't a yontif that they had some malacha and so on. I would just say that parallel today, they wouldn't say tachaman. You know what I mean? It's like that, you know, a little yontif. And the Gemara concludes that for the most part, Batla Megillas Tainus. We don't have any of those days. And the only two that we have are Chanukah and Purim. That's what the Gemara says. So the Chorer, it looks like you're not allowed to add on new holidays. So how do we add on, you know, to you can't do it. However, there's an interesting thing. The Gemara has an Erev in Daf Mem Aleph Mem Aleph. That the Rabbi Elazar Rav Tzadok, according to our correct Gersa, says, Ani Aisim Eisinah Ben Binyamin, okay, that there was a family that on the 10th of Av, every year when the Beis Hamikdash stood, they donated wood for the Beis Hamikdash, the Korban Eitzim. They donated the wood for the Maracha, for the Mizbeach. He used a lot of wood. So different families used to donate on different days. And their date was the 10th of Av. So, and they observed it as a mini yontif, that in a family. Now, one year, the Gemara there, Ervin Maimalov says, okay, we were from Sheva Binyamin, as Rashi says, and their lot was to give the Korban Eitzim on the 10th of Av in the days of Ezra yet. This was established at the beginning of the Bias Shema. So this was generations later. And they still observed this yontif, the family still observed this yontif on that day, to the point it was the 10th of Av in that particular year, Tishra, like, well, this year later on Shabbos. So it was pushed off to Sunday, and he said, I'm not fasting because my family has the yontif this day. Now, I don't want to go into that detail, but what do you see? So the Maharal Shachar, one of the poskim in 75, Chua Sin Mem Tes, was asked about a community that had some sort of salvation, and they wanted to mark it, thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so they established on this day, every year in this town, we're going to have a feast, you know, to mark this great Yeshua that took place. And it's going to be binding on us and our children. And the question was, can you make it, they asked Maharal Shachar, can you make it binding on the next generation or subsequent generation? And do they still have to live in that city or no? And then, well, there they go, they should observe it. And he says, yes, he goes, it's binding. And the Magen Avraham brings out a Pricharish. I'm not reading inside. Don't worry. 76. Siman Tov Tzadi Vav Sif Yud Dalet. The Pricharish disagrees strongly with this, and he says that there's a riot from there, and you can't make up, and so on. But most posim hold not like the Pricharish. Most posim hold like the Magen Avraham. In Siman Tov Reish Pei Vav or Achayim Sif Katan Hey writes as follows. Look at 77. That we can see inside. Yecholim Bnei Ir. They make their own private Purim. And there are such things to this day. There's something called Purim Frankfurt. Okay, which people, there are such days that people observed. In fact, in 78, the Chai Odom, at the very end of Hilchos Purim, Klal Kuf Nun Hei, Sif Mem Aleph, talks personally. He said in the second paragraph, first he discusses the Pricharish, we don't pass the Pricharish, but look at the last back page. And we'll finish up. The Pricharish writes, the Chayyim writes, look at the top paragraph. V'chein anu osim alanei shenas elanu b'shnas tov kuf samech dalet. That was, 1704. Tov kuf samech dalet. On Yom Tezayin Kislev, there was a great fire and people died in my neighborhood and things, buildings collapsed and the Choma Nofer tells the whole story in detail. And his family and many people were saved, but many people died. And so they made a decree that from that they're going to observe this mini Purim, so to speak. Like, oh, Megillah, it's not Purim. But then they established this holiday, and he said it's mutter. So that seems to indicate that it's okay to establish a holiday. But, some sofer, in his tshuva, Chelek Aleph, Chechor Chaim, Sim Kuf Tzadi Aleph, says, but that's for private communities, a private family. You can't make that all of Klal Yisrael. Yeah. So, but when can you make it all of Klal Yisrael? So with this, I'll finish. There's a pasuk at the end of Megillas Esther, Perek Tes, pasuk Yud Tes. I'm sorry this isn't in the sheets. The pasuk I have in the sheets when they established Purim originally as a Yom Tov. The author, Yaakov Lorberbaum, who is most known for the Nesivos, the famous Nesivos HaMishpat, the Choshen Mishpat, has a commentary on the Chamish Megillas, which is printed in the regular Mikoros Kedolos. On that pasuk, the one on Megillas Esther is called Megillas Starim. So on that pasuk in Megillas Esther, listen to this. He says, in Perek Tes, Pasuk Yud Tes, he said, if you're convinced that something is a Schalta Begula, not a private salvation like there was a fire like the Chayadim story or some town had a Yeshua, that's Taka, you can't make that binding on everybody else. But if it's something that's an Schalta Begula, it's going to lead to Binyan Bias, to Binyan of Bias, that you can make and celebrate every year all of Klal Yisrael. And listen, he writes, he said, that was the key to Purim. We always think Purim was, you know, they were saved from Haman. Yeah, that's true. But he said, ultimately, and I spoke about this year, Purim Tak, it led to the binyan of the Beis HaMikdash. So he writes, Chosus was chal to the Geula. The Rav Shei Agula, Shemis Geula, Shana Barak Shagar Machet, fine. He said, if he daitam, Shu has chal to the Geula, Yeish, Las, was Yontif, Kemal Bugul, Shon, like they made Pesach to make a Yontif on Purim too. And it sounds like you can observe it every year. And by the way, the Sras Emes, from the Chassidish world, says the same thing. Look at it, I printed the last two sources. In his Drush is a Purim, Tuf Reish Lamed Dalet, Nira Kineis Purim, Hoya Hachana Labaya Sheni. And his Drush is Tuf Reish Lamed Ches, Kine Inyan Megillah is also Shorish Mafteach Binyan Baya Sheni. So when you're celebrating is a step towards Binyan Beis Hamikdash, so then Taka, you can observe it as a Yantav, all of Klal Yisrael. Now, therefore, I think we're on solid ground marking an event like Hei Yer Tavshin Ches, and you know, Hei Yer of 1948. How you should mark it, how you should celebrate it. Say Hallel, don't say Hallel, say it, you're going to say it, say it with a bracha, say it without a bracha, say the Hallel Shalem, Chatzi Hallel, before Ashrei, after davening, you know. If you're in chutzah, it's on 2 days, like I'm saying, doing here in the shul. And that you can discuss, you know, can you listen to music, and can you shave? Okay, there's what to discuss, you know. And it's a show, you have to have a barbecue. Okay, I mean, that's open for discussion. And perhaps, you know, seriously, in the halachic sense, we can discuss another time, halal. But to have some sort of recognition, I think we're on very solid ground. Halachically, that's my point this evening. It's a point of classic sources. I'm not saying anything new. Classic sources indicate that there's significance, the establishment of Jewish sovereignty of Eretz Yisrael. Baruch Hashem, we've had it for 70 years. And how much, you know, has been accomplished in that 70 years. So the growth of Torah and so on, you know, is everything perfect? No. Is it the Gula Shlema? Certainly not. Okay, we have a long way to go. Perhaps, who knows? But that it's a beginning and it's something we should mark, I think there's ample room to say that that's the case. Okay, wish everybody well. Should be take a step towards being in by Shishim here real man.
Well, Hanukkah made up holidays, but it's because it's connected to the day.